For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Gentlemen, ladies, start your engines. Pesach! Let's talk about Pesach. Okay, first off, I think we mentioned this last week, but we're going to repeat this one idea. First thing we have to know that Pesach is always referred to in our prayer, in prayers, in the Siddur, you know, in Kiddush, all the time referred to as Yitzias Mitzrayim. Excuse me, Yitzias Mitzrayim. Yitzias Mitzrayim, going out of Egypt, right? I think we mentioned this last week. So really, we said that's not correct dikduk. That's not correct Hebrew grammar, Yitzias Mitzrayim. Right, to say I went out from Egypt, it should be Yitzias Mitzrayim. Right? So, we say Yitzias Mitzrayim, and I'll tell you why. Hang on to that. Now, remember this. We're going to sum this up. Okay, remember that idea. Yitzias Mitzrayim should say Yitzias Mitzrayim. That's our question, right? Now, you know, anytime we talk about the exile of Egypt and its redemption, we're talking about the paradigm for all future exiles and redemption, especially the final one. So that's why we have to sit there and analyze everything that happened there. Why we merited to come out, right? How we got there, right? All these things are going to be repeated. Why some people didn't make it out, how that will be repeated at the end of days. Okay, all these ideas. Now, therefore, the prophet Micha says, it says there that he talks about the future redemption. You know what's going to happen? He says, I'm going to show you wonders, miracles, like that of you coming out of Mitzrayim. Ki yemei seischa me'eretz Mitzrayim er ena niflois. Like the days that you came out of Egypt, I'm going to show you miracles like those. That's Micha chapter 7, verse 11. Okay? So, Rav Shmuel Mulver asked the question, if you wanted to compare the ultimate redemption, you know, times of Mashiach, to the ultimate, the greatest miracles, what's the first miracle that comes to your mind? Or it should come to your mind. Well, that's good. That's good. And we're going to talk about that. The splitting of the sea. You know, it says a person's a zivug, his spouse, is as hard as the splitting of the sea. A person's sustenance. This is all quotes in the Talmud. His livelihood is as hard as the splitting of the sea. That's always the miracle that you compare things to. That's the ultimate miracle, the splitting of the sea. And if you look at Ethics of Our Fathers, it tells you that there was five times as many miracles at the splitting of the sea as there was in Egypt. You know, if you hold there was 10 plagues or 10 miracles in Egypt, so in the Haggadah, this is in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, right? It says, well, there was 50 at the sea. I'm sorry, I didn't mean Ethics of Our Fathers. It's in the Haggadah. And if one rabbi says, well, there was really 50 in Egypt, then there's 250 at the sea. And they go back and forth, and they darshan, and they learn out. But everybody agrees there's five times as many miracles at the splitting of the sea as there was in Egypt. Okay, so back to our question, right? You're going to tell me times of Mashiach is going to be great wonders, great miracles. So say, like the splitting of the sea, like you tell me everything else, livelihood, a person's spouse, right? All, right? So why does it say, Kimei Seish Chameres Yisrael, but it'll only be like coming out of Egypt. So, he says, you see from here what? That it's easier to split the sea than to take the Jew out of Golis. It's true, the splitting of the sea is the ultimate miracle. But to take the Yid stuck in Golis, and Rashi and Chumash says that Kosh Baruch had to take like each one of us, Kavyacho, by the hand and take us out of there. Okay, we get so assimilated in the Golis. Therefore, it's very good why it doesn't say Yitziat Mimitzrayim, which would be the proper way if we wanted to say the going out of Egypt. Mimitzrayim, from Egypt. No, we say Yitziat Mitzrayim, because the big kunz is to take Yitziat Mimitzrayim, to take the Mitzrayim out of us. That's what Yitziat Mitzrayim means. Right? It took, like that, the blink of God's eyes to take the Jew out of Egypt. But it took 40 years in the desert, right, to take the Egypt out of the Jew. You hear? That's it. And that is why, during the plague of darkness, four-fifths didn't make it. You know, we all know we were on the 49th level of impurity, right? Couldn't stay there another moment. But four-fifths, approximately, according to the smallest calculation, 12 million Jews did not make it out. Because, right, that Egypt was so much in them, they couldn't get out of Egypt. Completely assimilated. So, we said, this is it. This is the paradigm. What's going to happen at the end? And that's what's going to happen. At the end of days, that's what's going to happen. A lot of our brothers and sisters ain't going to make it. They're going to be so into the Golus, right? So assimilated. You can just look around, you know, we see, so many people are assimilated, so many, you know, we talked about the four sons, the four sons, you know, the wise, the wicked, the simple, and doesn't ask, the fifth son, right? We know that represents four generations. You know, first generation, the wise son, you know, but he didn't send his child to Cheder, he didn't send him to Yeshiva, so he becomes a simple son. The next one, by the third generation, is a wicked son. He's mocking Judaism, right? So what are these statutes doing? The fourth one, right? The fourth generation already doesn't know what's going on. You know, he doesn't know how to ask. And the fifth son, there is no fifth son. The fifth generation ain't there. It's not at the Seder anymore. That's one of the four-fifths that perished during the plague of darkness, right? Completely assimilated. Okay, and as a matter of fact, it says at the end of days, if I can find it, it says that the nations of the world, the Goyim, will bring a present to God. So the Jews, they'll schlep the Jews. The Jews will be so much into the Golus, we won't want to get out, that the Goyim will have to take us. How embarrassing. How embarrassing. That they'll have to take us back to our homeland. Some of us will be in such bad shape. Okay, so that is a little about the exile of Egypt, and again, you know, the parallel is very, very true, because Egypt was the height of culture, the height of civilization, you know, in their embalming methods and medicine, and they talk about the pyramids and their architecture, all these things. Egypt was it. Egypt was the America of its day. You should know that. Very highly cultured, right? And we came down there, we were very well respected because of Yosef, and what happened after a while, you know, first we stayed distinct and we assimilated, and you know, we could just see very clearly the parallel here in America, you know, the most cultured, most civilized. Okay, we'll stop, take questions, talk about the Goyim having to schlep the Jews back. I had this in Chattanooga, and probably everybody in this room knows a case like this, where you have someone who converts, okay. Right? Whatever it is, and it's not the reason you can convert. I'm not going to get into all the factors in there where you have a mixed marriage. It's not legal. But you always find, inevitably, it's the non-Jewish, quote-unquote, spouse that's more interested in Judaism. You know, maybe that's a sneak glimpse of what's that all about. One of the many things that the Exodus Mitzrayim teaches us one of the things it teaches us is that, and this is what you started to hit upon, Elaine, is that God intervenes in the affairs of man. He just didn't create the world. He did something greater. He's involved in the affairs of man. He gets involved in the history of mankind. Okay, and that's why the culmination of this holiday is Shavuos. We get the Torah. That's the whole purpose for our freedom. Right? Okay? So that's why it says in the first of the Ten Commandments, which we read on Shavuos, I'm the Lord your God that created the heaven and the earth, right? Doesn't say that. Wrong. Oh. I'm the Lord your God that took you out of Egypt.
Trick question.
Because that's a higher level. It's amazing. It's a higher level because God didn't just create the world to run. He's involved. He's involved in our affairs. He gets involved. And Egypt, Exodus, is the classic representative of that, because here's God. He says in the Agarshal Pesach, he took a nation from within a nation. Again, this idea that we were so assimilated, goy mikir of goy, from the womb of another nation. We were so into the Egyptians that he had to extract us like a calf coming out of the birth canal. You know, you got to take us out, really, you know, extract us. And that was a tremendous miracle in itself, that he took a nation from within another nation, a nation that was completely assimilated, the 49th level of impurity, okay? So that shows that we chose, Hashem chose us as his nation. He's involved in the our affairs in the nation of Israel. He gets involved and will even to such an extent manipulate his set laws that we call nature. He'll manipulate them and overturn them and suspend them for the sake of his nation. And that's what the 10 plagues are. You know, completely, you know, supernatural stuff. It's unbelievable. Right? Now, the Chinuch, which is a famous book, talks about, if you notice, we have so many mitzvahs that say, Zecher L'Tziat Mitzrayim, in remembrance of coming out of Egypt. Let's go over some of them. The Shema, right? The prayer, right? You know, our prayer that we say in the morning, and which we say at night, and we say before we die, all the, right? Shema, say Zecher L'Tziat Mitzrayim. On the mezuzah, Zecher L'Tziat Mitzrayim. Tefillin, Zecher L'Tziat Mitzrayim. Tzitzis, Zecher L'Tziat Mitzrayim. All the holidays, Shavuos, Sukkos, and Pesach, of course. Zecher L'Tziat Mitzrayim. Shabbos, Zecher L'Tziat Mitzrayim. Bekula, Bekula, so on and so on. We can go on and on with this. Okay? He says, why is that? He says, the idea is that, this is Ramban also says this, he says that God is not going to come in every generation, and when some fool says, you know, I'll believe in God if he creates a miracle. And he's not going to overturn his world every time some idiot wants to, you know, proof that God's running the world. So what do you do? One time in the inception, the birth of the nation of Israel, what did God do? He did all those miracles. He overturned nature on its head, right? And did all the 10 plagues and the splitting of the sea, as we mentioned, there's more miracles there, right? For all time to remember that God is the creator of the world and is involved in the affairs of man. He did that one time, and therefore, he's not going to do it in every generation. But we have these mitzvahs that constantly tell us, remember coming out of Egypt. Don't forget. I'm not going to go around doing these miracles in every generation. So constantly we have that remembrance of coming out of Egypt, okay, that God is our personal guardian supervisor. Now, talk about freedom. Maharal has a big question. All the commentaries have this question. Basically, we call this Zman Cherusenu, a time of our freedom. So the question is asked, you know, if it's a time of our freedom, you know, well, what, you know, there's other times since the Exodus that we've been subservient, if you will, physically. And we've been persecuted, right? And we've been enslaved, right? Other things have happened to us, the temple destructions, right? The Spanish Inquisition, the Holocaust, right? Get the idea. So what's the idea? It doesn't sound like too much of a freedom. Says the problem is, says the Maharal, we don't understand what freedom is. We think freedom is like civil rights. You know, you march, this, you get your right. That's not freedom. A person can walk around without a ball and chain and be a slave. He can be a slave to his desires, to his lusts, to his drives. He can, as it says here, a person with no goal is a slave to the visions of others. Right? That's why Shavuos, the giving of the Torah, is the culmination of our holiday of Pesach. Without the Torah, you're a slave. You just... you're to the vision of others. Every whim, fad, every cultural, political, correct thing out there, they tell you what's humane and what's not humane and what's correct and everything. You're a puppet in their hand. You just start following the bandwagon. That's a slave. But with the Torah, you become a slave to God, which gives you the ultimate freedom. Think about it. Ein ben chorim ela mi she'osek b'Torah. No such thing as a free person other than that person who's involved in Torah. Right? Our instruction book. That's what it means. Torah means instruction. Teaches how to live. Set a goal. Vision. So that's what Maharal says. Egypt, we became intrinsically free. The culmination at Mount Sinai. You know, we count 49 days. Pesach to Shavuos. Connecting those, as we talked about many times. Right? For that reason. There you're a free person. Right? You're a free person. You know what to do. And therefore, it doesn't matter. But even if physically the Jew is persecuted, his body is persecuted, right? His spirit, his neshama is free. He's intrinsically free from the time of Pesach on. So there might be an Inquisition. There might be a Holocaust. Lo aleinu, we should know from it, right? But they can never, the Jews are always free. Intrinsically, we have the ultimate freedom. We have the Torah. We have a guide, know what to do. Okay? Do you understand? So the physical servitude is a temporary thing that can't offset the nitzchias, the eternal ramification of the coming out of Egypt, which means we're free. So, this is very interesting. You know, on Pesach, he doesn't mention this, but he ties it in. We eat matzah. And you know, matzah represents the bare minimum in the physical world, basically. Right? I mean, you know, water, flour, you know, don't give it time to rise. Like, doing with as little to do with the materialistic physical world as possible, getting by. You know, involved spirituality, not materialistic. Now, so we all have the question, we know God created the world for us to enjoy. Well, all too often it distracts us. He says very nicely here. He says, talks about the things we have, from satellite dishes to technology of virtual reality. He says, life's comforts are here to be enjoyed. But be aware, from behind their friendly luster lays a scheme to enslave us all. Right? To mollify our grit, determination, to deny us our goals, our dreams, our ultimate freedom. In other words, you know, they become an ends in themselves instead of a means for the ends. You know, instead of going on vacation to relax and unwind and come back to be able to serve God better, we feel that the vacation was the climax of the year, instead of davening and shul or learning and doing acts of kindness, right? You understand? We enjoy the food, the candy bar, more than the bracha, so forth and so on. So all this is part of slavery. When the time, the station breaks, says the Maharal, that's called Mitzrayim, Pesach comes around again. When that comes, we have a chance to become free again. It's here. We're given a special system to become free from all the materialistic things that want to enslave us. You know, work for your car, work for your house, you know, just continue to redecorate and getting nuclear. I mean, that's what you're living for. Living for your vacations. Hopefully we're not, but that's what you are. Pesach gives you a chance to free yourself, to find out what your essence is, who you're really about. And your real freedom means that you're connected to Torah and God. And to know who you are, you're a Jew. Okay? So that's the aspect of freedom of Pesach. Very good question. The connection between the 49 days of the counting of the Omer and that we are on the 49th level of impurity. Now what happened? We had a tremendous jump. We went from the 49th level of pure impurity to the 49th level of holiness. Right? You know, and we had this vision at the splitting of the sea. It was like on the level almost of Yechizkiel, the great prophet Ezekiel, right? So, then it was taken away from us. And what you're saying, you got to listen to this, because it applies to each and every one of us. It was taken away from us, and then we had to start to earn it on our own, each one of those 49 days of the Omer. That's what happens in each and one of our every individual lives. God will give you a certain awareness, an awakening, this urus, this chanshus. You start seeing the geshmak in a Shabbos, in a mitzvah, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden, you feel like he dropped you in the desert, and you feel nothing. You know, when I first started getting to Yiddish guy, you start feeling the geshmak and things, you know, and then all of a sudden, because God, just like the Jews, didn't really merit getting the 49th level of holiness and prophecy. But it was given to them as a gift. I want you to get a glimpse of what it's about. The beauty of serving Hashem, Torah, spirituality, all these things. You see that geshmak? Now I've got to take it away from you. Because by definition, if you don't work for it and earn it, it ain't going to last. It ain't going to last. But at least you'll have a glimpse. Now you'll have a desire to get there on your own. I'll take it away. Now you earn it on your own. And then it'll stay with you. That's the idea. That's the idea of the 49 days of the Omer. You look in books of mysticism, it starts talking about how each one represents different, like, different spiritual worlds, how you should work on different character traits. That's why it's a tradition to read Ethics of Our Fathers during those weeks. Okay? to start working on yourself and getting yourself to the level that was given to you artificially, not to earn it on your own. Okay? So that really is a synopsis, and it says this in the Shteit and Sforim. Whenever you can't remember the book, just say Shteit and Sforim, which means it says it in the books. Shteit and Sforim, that's each one of our lives. Those 49 days represent the entire lifespan of a person growing, you know, in Yiddishkeit, given an artificial high, so to speak, spiritual high, and then earning on his own. Okay, a couple. I feel like when one of my rabbis once told me, a student once came up to a famous rav and said to him, you know, the Maharal, unbelievable, can you believe it? A Kabbalah, mysticism, this guy built, you know, he built a man, can you believe, unbelievable. And the rav looked at him and goes, that's what impresses you about the Maharal? That's nothing compared to his Torah. Look at his beautiful insights in Torah. That's far greater than able to build an individual. Interesting, the Maharal was adopted by the Hasidim as their father, even though that was before the Hasidic movement. But you see a lot of Hasidic, like, mysticism thought coming very much in the same channel that the Maharal's thinking was. Very, very mystical person. Intervened a lot with the government back then to save the Jews from a lot of false, you know, all the blood libels and all that stuff. It was a very rough time for us. Yeah. There are people in the Gemara that did this. They made a calf every Friday for Seudah Shabbos and actually made human beings. The one thing that a man is not able to do is give a human being the power of speech. That comes straight from God. Yeah, it was just purely Kabbalah. It's like unbelievable stuff.
I'm not clear.
So students, evidently, there's of the four different types of, you know, fire, air, earth, and water, certain, every one of us is strong in a certain one of those four. And he knew through his mysticism, and, you know, and they did all sorts of things, you know, and I have no idea what the heck I'm talking about. But that's what I read. You know, I don't know from these things. I really don't. I can barely, you know, I myself feel like a golem without the Maharal.
Did it have the image?
Yeah, he scratched out an image on the dirt. You're forbidden to make a grave image, but if you want to go ahead and make a real human being, go ahead. Let me know. Get back to me on that, and let me know how you do. No, you're absolutely right. You wouldn't be allowed to do it if it wasn't during what's called Haral Shah, the need of the time when we were in tremendous danger. And the Maharal, he climbed up spiritually and sought permission and was granted it to do this. I think they say by the Vilna Gaon he was denied permission to build it. I'm not sure on that exactly. But this is all stuff that we really... I'm sorry I mentioned it, to be honest with you, because this is not something we get really involved in. It's nice to know because, you know, you see the greatness of the person and everything, and also where they got the Frankenstein idea. But really, for practicality, it's way beyond us. We can't understand what this is all about. Let's move on, guys, to more down-to-earth things. I want you all to remember her question. The question's very good. How in 49 days you go from the 49th level of impurity to the opposite extreme, and your question is your answer. It must mean now you get a glimpse of what that generation was all about. And you get a whole different outlook when we talk about their sins, like the golden calf. Unfortunately, you weren't here for that class, but we went into depth how sophisticated, and that was all according to mysticism and Kabbalah, that they built that golden calf. It wasn't a simple sin. And so you weren't here for that class, but we went in detail about that. But basically, we're talking about a generation that the Talmud describes, Dora Dea, the generation of knowledge. Never was a generation like that before them, never will be. They merited to have Moshe as their leader. The generation, you know, always merits. I used to tell them this in Chattanooga. The community or generation always merits a rabbi on their level. And that's why they were stuck with me, so they could never complain. Right? So they merited to have a Moshe Rabbeinu. So you can understand what level they are on. You're right. This was a very... I mean, even with all that, you see God's intervention for these people. You know, but it should be noted. All the sins that you do in the desert, the murmur that you're going to hear later, God's going to be taken in a very, very different light. We're talking about very great people. Okay, guys, I'm going to have to hold them. I'll take them again in a few minutes. Okay. By the way, the truth is, what Jordy's saying as... there usually is a requirement of what's called a sarusa de la tata, which means an awakening from below. Usually we have to do something, however small it is. Like it says, make me, it says in the Medrash of Shir Shirim, make me the opening, the eye of a needle, says God. You know, do a little something, and I'll make you the opening like a great hall. So they say, that's a Sarusat del Tata, make a little awakening from below, and God will respond with an awakening from above. You know, you take a step in the right direction, God will help you. You'll feel melt. It says Pesach is an exception. That's why it's called Pesach. I mean, we know also why it's called Pesach, the simple meaning that Shem passed over our homes. But really also, Pesach, he passed over, he skipped over the usual necessity for us to have a Sarusa de la Tata, an awakening from below. God just bestowed on us this tremendous gifts of this 49 levels that we eventually reached to. This was the one exception, maybe. I mean, even if all that, this is a generation, Dor HaDeah. But, by the way, it's interesting. In the Haggadah, it says Kadesh. You know, the 15 different things that we do, there's an order to them. A Seder. That's why it's called a Seder. It also teaches us that everything in life has to have a Seder, a priority. You have sensitivities to certain things out there that are property, but have a priority. You know, what comes first? You know, you're in a Neshama, Jewish people. You've got to put things in Seder. So, Kopa Seder? Yeah. So anyway, so in the Haggadah, if you notice some of the steps, it says Kadesh. You know, one of the first steps, Kadesh, and then the next steps, Urchatz, wash. Now that's not, you know, that's not usually the way we do things. Let me explain. Kadesh means to sanctify yourself, start doing good. Urchatz is to wash, to cleanse yourself, right? Usually you go to the mikveh before, you know, there's a custom to go to the mikveh Erev Shabbos or before a holiday. You purify yourself, and then you get into the sanctity of the day. That's the idea. So there's a verse that's written, it says, Sur Marav Asatayv. You should go away from bad and do good. That's usually the order. First, stop doing sins. You know, first stop doing, and then start doing good. Okay? Pesach is an exception. Pesach, Hashem gives the Jew the ability to go straight to Kaddish and then Urchatz. Go straight to being sanctified, to doing good, and not having to cleanse yourself prior. It's Kaddish Urchatz. That's again on this line that you were talking to. Okay, and that's why it's called Pesach, because Kadosh Baruch Hu skipped over the usual requirement that we Urchatz, Asarusa de la Tata, we purify ourselves first from below before He purifies us from above. Right? This is pretty heavy-duty stuff. Let's get back down there. Lost them all. Okay. Let me ask you guys a question. If we're celebrating this night being royalty, Halacha says you should be like kings. You know, that's why we lean. Why we eat. You put out your best silver, china, whatever it is on Pesach. You know that, right? Right? This is freedom and your royalty this night. Right? You're all kings and queens. So, that's what the whole celebration is. What the heck is the maror doing here? You know, matzah represents freedom, very fine and good. But maror, that's the bitterness. That's what it literally means. Afflictions, the troubles, the exile. We're at this time, we're celebrating and being great. Why are we eating maror? Simply, that's the pshat. The pshat is, you know, how can you appreciate freedom if you don't sit there and, you know, tell over how you were in bitterness, how you were afflicted, how you were in servitude? Now you can appreciate the freedom. Very good. Very good. That's the classic answer. I want to take something a little deeper, maybe. A little different. It says, Yeet Mar on Pesach. This is going to connect to the beginning of this year for a couple reasons. Number one, as we talked about so often, you're going to see what you thought was bitter, right? What you thought was bitter was really sweet. You know, we talked about this in our individual lives, certain afflictions that we went through, suffering. Afterwards, it was the best thing that ever happened to us. The Moshe Rabbeinu says at the splitting of the sea, Az Yashir, everybody burst out in simultaneous nevuah, prophecy. Right? Even the women. The men sang Az Yashir, and Moshe led them, and Miriam led the women. Right? And that wasn't just a song. That was simultaneous prophecy. Right? A song means that you see everything in total harmony. You see everything now in perspective. Moshe said, I sin with the word Oz, I'm going to fix it up with the word Oz. It said at the end of Exodus, from the time that Oz bought to the Paro, from the time I came to the Paro, you did evil to these people. He didn't understand why they were being persecuted so much. He says, now I see my mistake. When it's all over, I sing a song to you. Because what I saw as an isolated event as bitter, as maror, I see now it's a shira. It was all necessary. And we gave a whole class on this because those extra 6 months of very, very hard labor saved us another 190 years of being in Egypt. We're supposed to be there 400 years. And that would have meant complete assimilation. We would have never made it. So from Moshe's perspective at this point, at that spot when the arm was being amputated, it was very bitter. It was mar. I didn't understand it. In retrospect, Az Yashir. I'm going to fix up my sinas. I'm going to sing the song. I see it was all for our benefit. That's why we eat mar on Pesach. He says, because says the Chiddush Yerim, the maror and the matzah are not two different things. They're both freedom. They're both processes of ultimate redemption. And the exile was a prerequisite. It was a necessary step for the ultimate redemption. That's why we say in Hallel, Hodu Lashem ki tov ki le'olam chasto. You should praise Hashem, it's good. Ki le'olam chasto means ki le'olam. When you look at forever, eternity, everything is good. Everything is God's kindness. At the point that it's happening, you don't understand it. Okay? So that's one idea. And that's why they say Az Yashir is in the future tense. We sang a song because we're going to sing another song at the end of days. That's going to be the ultimate song. The ultimate song of harmony when we see all of God's events, all the events of history were godly events. And all the suffering and humiliation the Jewish people suffered was really in harmony and it was all necessary steps for redemption. So that will be the ultimate song. Everything will fit. Okay? That's one idea of Shira. That idea of Maror, why we eat Maror Pesach. It's part of the celebration. Another idea is, what we talked about at the beginning of the class, is this idea that we get a little too comfortable in the exile. One of the greatest things that happened to us is that we felt it was bitter. As soon as we felt that the Golus was bitter, it was Maror, oh! Now there can be a redemption. We cry out to God. We wanted to be saved. Until then, we were very happy. And by the way, that's why you find sometimes Maror is very good. In America, we don't have too much Maror, compared to Russian Jewry, all these things. And we don't cry out for a redemption that much. You can bet Russian Jewry puts a lot more into their prayers than we can. They know what it's about. Okay? So therefore, Maror can be a very good thing. He goes on to say, you find times that when a person is, he's sitting there with the comfort and honor and wealth, right? He doesn't feel spirituality. It dulls the senses. You become grub, right? You become coarse. You become lost again in the materialistic world. But what happens when a person's afflicted, right? Then he starts becoming religious. No atheist in a foxhole. Right? And that's what it means. There's a statement that says that Yisurin afflictions, they cleanse a person. Okay? Because it takes you away from the pleasures of this world, which gives you the false impression that you're not in exile. When you have afflictions, you realize, oh, this is not good. This is exile. I'm not interested in this. And you pray for redemption. Okay? So that's the idea. So therefore, by way of Maror, by way of the bitterness of the exile, a person can raise himself up, right, to the level of Matzah. Okay? That's what it means. And that's why he says, or Gedaliah says, that we have Matzah and Maror together. Because only by way of Maror, of feeling that the exile is bitter, can a person come to this level of Matzah, which is ultimate freedom. That's his drasha. You ask, is there a connection between Yisurin, which is spelled with a samech, and Yashir, which is a shin, not a samech, but you never know with these things. It could be a connection. It could be the very things that we cry over now as Yisurin will sing over in the future, that those are things that cleanse us. Could be. I haven't seen anything on that, but it's a very, very interesting. Rule of 50 levels of impurity, 50 levels of purity is always like this. There's a balance in the world of free will. Zel umasesh salukim. Hashem made this parallel to this. There's always a parallel. Me and this black hat, gray. Right, whatever it is. It doesn't go by that. God just everybody individually, who you are, your character traits, your upbringing. I have no idea, you know, we have no idea in this room who's higher than who in God's eyes. It really is irrelevant to us. We're only going to be compared to ourselves. I don't know if it was a curve at the 50th level or just that when you're that sunk in the mud, it really doesn't matter how deep in it you are. Very, very good point. A lot of people say this is rock bottom. We're called Ikseh de Mashiach. We're called the heels of the Messiah. The human body, right, being like all generations of Jewry, we're the heel, the very bottom. We've hit rock bottom. You're right. A lot of people say it's very imminent. It's coming. You're right. Just look around. The world's going into a cesspool, the morality of things and stuff. You're 100% right. That's why it's very relevant that we study Mitzrayim and learn from what we can and not repeat the mistakes and find out the keys to redemption, because it's happening. You're right.
Kol
Moed, a person should, if he could, try to schedule their vacation during that time of Kol Moed Pesach and Kol Moed Sukkos, and not to treat it lightly. You're supposed to eat finer during those days. It has an aspect of a yontif to it, yet work, malacha, that's the word, malacha, halachic work is allowed. Even though a profession that you're at, if you can, if it's possible, you should try to take off. So that's the intermediate days.
Right, but what?
Scriptural verse tells us that the first day and the last day will be a yontif to you. Now, the last day of Pesach was the splitting of the sea. So we see that very clearly. Sukkos is a little tougher to see that, but then Sukkos, that becomes a holiday in itself, Shemini Atzeres. But the seventh day of Sukkos is Yom Tov. Now, we're in Golis, outside of Israel, we add a day. So even though the Torah says the first and the seventh day, by us it's the first and second, the seventh and the eighth. We need a little extra here to get the same that they do in Israel. So good question. Historically, you see very clearly the first day is a Yom Tov when we came out of Egypt, and the last day was the splitting of the sea. Okay? Sukkos is a little trickier. Sukkos is a little trickier how to figure that one out. You know, but the Torah says it. The bottom line, anytime we ask, you know, why is this, and we give some reasons, you understand that's just like the tip of iceberg. We really don't, there's depths and depths. You'll hear a lot of things if you go to a lot of classes. You'll hear other insights from other rabbis, and they're all true. They're all true.
I like, don't accept any reason at this point because I don't know any reason, so I just need a reason.
Right, no, I'm just saying, I'm saying even though, let's say, we can't find a reason why the seventh day of Sukkos, by our logic, is a yontov, there's definitely a reason. We're not privy to know every one of them.
So
we don't have to deal with that aspect, but simply put, there's three times a year there was a mitzvah to see the Beis HaMikdash and go there, and you would go there and you'd spend the whole, you know, 7 days there, and there was constant activities. As, like you said, especially Sukkos, there was, you know, the Simchas Beis HaShoev every night and everything. Those unbelievable things going on. But this was a time, you got to understand, the three festivals are like stations to charge up to the next one. Pesach, you get charged spiritually. You come to the Beis HaMikdash, you see open miracles, right? Prophets, great people from all over Israel, right? And you're there, and it keeps you plugged in until Shavuos. Then Shavuos, you're plugged in again until Sukkos. You know, these were, and again, no coincidence that this spiritual reality parallels, the physical world parallels it. The physical world parallels it, right? And therefore, you have the harvest festivals during these three times. Pesach for wheat, Shavuos for fruits. You know, Sukkos was a Chag HaAsif. It's called the Harvest Festival. By the way, it's very interesting. I'll just tell you real quick. It's beautiful. You know, Pesach lands in what month? Nisan. You know what Nisan's called in Hebrew? Another name for it. Aviv. The spring. Spring. Av Yud Beis, the father of 12. Nisan's considered the first of the 12 months. Now, what happens in the spring? You have buds, flowers, right? Right? And that's not the Gemar Pri. That's not the finishing product. The finishing product of those flowers is that they bear fruit. Do you know why? Because in the spiritual world, our springhood of a nation was coming out of Egypt. That was our budding. We budded in the spring, in the Aviv. But that wasn't the final product. We didn't become free just to be, you know, just not to have a ball and chain on us. The fruits came 49 days later. Shavuos, the giving of the Torah. That's exactly when those buds in the physical world go from flowers to actual edible fruit. Because in the spiritual world, that's the first. That's the reality, right? Our springhood is Pesach, and the whole purpose of that spring is for the fruits of Shavuos to give the Torah. Therefore, the physical world follows suit. Isn't that beautiful? You know, and you see this all the time. Okay, speaking of first fruits, he says, beautiful idea here, Rav Simcha Bunim of Pshischa is a Chassidish Rebbe. He says that even though today we have no first fruits, you take the first fruits and give it to the Kohen. He says, in a certain aspect you can, even in X I'll have first fruits. It's very important to remember this. A person is first fruits of the day. The first hour of the day that you wake up, if you dedicate your mind, your speech, your actions to Hashem, right? You don't talk to people, you don't greet them, you don't get on the phone, you don't start doing your laundry. You just dedicate to Hashem. You pray, right? All these things. You pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the morning, the first thing, and don't get any fear, don't let anything else interfere. That's giving your first fruits of your thoughts, speech, and action to God. And therefore, the rest of the day is considered holy. Because you made a statement, this comes first. You come first, God. I realize I can't do anything without your help. First off, I connect with you. I talk to you. And I serve you. Then I go about my daily routine knowing that you'll bless it. So that's the way a person gives Bikurim today. Okay? If you want to know, how does holiness rest in the rest of the day? It says, when you give a tithe, all the other nine parts become holy. In other words, you got $100. Right? So you gave $10, you tithed it, you gave $10 tzedakah. But if it wasn't for the $100, you wouldn't have given the $10. So the fact that you gave the $10 makes the other $90 holy, because it participated in the mitzvah. Right? So same way, the first hour of the day you give to God, the rest of the day becomes holy. I mean, obviously, The final redemption will be a repetition of coming out of Egypt, we said, right? That's the paradigm, so we always have to look at these things. Now, it says that really the times of the redemption, the times of change, is clearly told to us in the Torah. Got everybody's attention. It's clearly written to us in the Torah, but it's written in such a fashion that we can't see that it's clear until after the fact. Just like right now, they find hints for the Holocaust very easily in the Torah and all these other things. Right? After the fact, you can find it. After Mashiach will come, we'll look back in the Torah and go, can't believe it. It was right there! Just want you to know that. Something to look forward to. Okay, let's we'll try to finish something off with a bang here. By the way, it's interesting, when we talked about the Maror really being good, though it looks like bad, the Gematria, it's interesting, they have an interesting numerical value for the word Egos. Egos means, you know what Egos means?
A nut.
Will you call me one, or will you just tell me the translation of the word? Oh, thank you. Okay. So anyways, Egos is a nut. And its numerical value is 17, which is the same as Tov. Okay, which is good. And this is, they say the following on this. So they say, the nut, now this gets kind of mystical. These are all metaphors for mystical stuff, but the nut has a shell on it, a klipa. Right, which is not any use in itself, except for the fact that it protects the meat of the edible fruit. It's a protection, it's an armor. In itself, it's nothing. Right? It's not edible. Right? When you remove it, then you expose the edible fruit, the meat of the fruit. Okay? So it looks like it's hard on the outside, and it's bitter, and it's not any good, but inside is sweet meat. It says that also is a parallel, a metaphor for things that would go in our lives. So times seem to be hard, like the outside, like a shell of a nut, right? You should know deep inside, hidden within that shell, is good sweet meat. Now you're going through certain things in your life, or as a nation, for certain reasons, you don't understand, that's the shell of the nut. It's for your protection. You didn't get what you wanted, Hashem's protecting you. Because He knows what you need. We don't know what we need, what's good for us. Okay? So you can wait after a while, you'll get it through the shell, you'll find the nut. Okay. Okay, the final word here on Argolis, connecting with our Moror. It says in the covenant of the parts, Brisbane of Asarim to Abraham. Hashem tells Abraham, he says, you know, your children are going to be strangers in a land not theirs for 400 years. Okay? Now, for one, we see a built-in flexibility in a prophecy because we are only in Egypt 210 years. So we talked about that many times, but one aspect of that is it's the 400 years is counted from the birth of Isaac, from the birth of Yitzchak. How the heck does that work? Yitzchak, we know, all 180 years of his life spent the entire time in Israel. He never stepped foot out of it, right? And that also encompasses some of Avram's life, obviously, and Yaakov's life, right? So how is that considered 400 years afflicting the land not yours? So the idea is that the Avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, were on such a level that they could feel the affliction of exile without being physically beaten. It's only because of our weakened state spiritually that we don't feel we're in exile. God had to put us in Egypt, and the slavery was only, by the way, 86 years. Right? It was only 86 years. And by the way, it's from the birth of Miriam. That's why she's called Miriam. If you notice, the same root word, maror, mar, Miriam, all connected. That's when it started. Okay, so it was 86 years. At the time Yosef brought the family down to Egypt, it was 210. And then there was a process, slowly, of servitude, but the actual slavery was 86 years. And again, that's because when we first came down, the tribes were on such a level that they felt they were in exile. They didn't need a physical reminder on the body. But as the tribes died and the next generation came, right, well, we did it. We got pretty comfortable there. So God had to put the physicality of exile on us. It shows you that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov felt exile when they were in Israel. Why? Because the definition of the exile is the exile of the Shekhinah. That the Shekhinah, the God's presence, is not in its right place. That the world is not perfected. That the whole world doesn't believe in God. Right? That's what exile basically means in a nutshell. Sorry. Okay? Right? So therefore, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they felt that. They were in Israel, yeah, but the whole world, a lot of people believe in idols. That's still part of exile. They didn't need a physical reminder. They felt agmas nefesh. They felt such a sorrow of soul not to see God's name hole and his throne hole, right, that they were in exile already. So that just shows there's different forms of exile. There's different forms of exile. That's why Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev, when he used to eat the maror on Pesach night, he used to sit there and they used to watch him, and he felt all the bitterness and afflictions of all his fellow Jews that they were suffering at the time, eating the maror. That's how he did the mitzvah of maror. There's different levels. There's different levels of feeling these things. Okay? So that's one aspect. The other aspect, the way we get to that level, is in that very prophecy to Abraham. It says, Ger Yezarecha, you'll be stranger in a land not yours. Now let me ask you, is there such a thing as being a stranger in a land that is yours? Of course, I mean, that seems redundant. You'll be straight in a land not yours? Of course you're a stranger. So some learn this as a command. You know what? You want to avoid physical persecution on the body? Feel the exile. Feel you're a stranger. Ger yeb zarecha be'eretz lo lahem. Remember, I'm giving you a command. When you're in a land that's not yours, feel like you're in a land that's not yours. Feel you're a stranger. Don't get so comfortable there. You're not at home. If you feel you're at home, well, the verse in Tehillim says, God changed the hearts of the Egyptians to hate his people. It's a quote from Psalms. Why? They forgot they're in exile. The Egyptian loved us when we first came down there. We caused the hatred. We caused the slavery. We got too comfortable. So that's it. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov didn't need a physical servitude because they felt they were in a stranger, not theirs. Until God's name is whole and his throne is whole. Until the goal, you know, is completely rectified and Hashem returns and there's a base of Migdash, right? And so our job, the job of Mitzrayim, what we start off, Gir Yezrecha, be a stranger in a land not yours. Right? Yitziat Mitzrayim, take out the Egypt, take out the America from the Jew. Right? That's the job of Pesach. Pesach rolls around, gives you a chance to be free. Free means taking out the exile from you. Realizing who you are, what your essence is, that you're a Jew. You're not at home. You're not at home. This isn't home. You're an exile. Be aware of that. Yit maror. You're an exile. Oh, but that's a good thing. That's a celebration. The fact that you can eat maror and realize you're an exile is a sign that you're on your way to redemption. You're on your way to redemption because you realize you're an exile. You don't realize you're an exile. You don't realize it's bitter. Can't be a redemption. That's freedom. That's Pesach. Comes around, you have a chance to unlock on these things, but you got to get into it. You got to, to the degree you want to get, you know, something out of Pesach, Pesach will get something out of you. Got to prepare for it. Got to prepare for it. Here it's coming. 3-4 days. Right? Get ready. Get your game faces on. It's a special time of year. Great chance for spiritual aliyahs. Just to go aliyah to Israel, you can go there that night. Spiritually. Chag Kashrut Sameach.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.